Good evening, everybody. I'm John O'Neill. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, John.
My sobriety date is October 20th, 2020. I have a sponsor. I sponsor men. I have a home group, which is the 10:30 a.m. 3333 Sober on Saturday meeting. I love that meeting. It is fantastic. If you ever get a chance to come check it out, there's like 12 guys in there that have between them like something crazy like 250 years of sobriety. Where should I start? I guess I was born here in Tampa. I grew up in Crystal River, Florida. I noticed pretty, well, I didn't notice, but I was just discontent. I was a discontent kid. I didn't get along with my brothers. I had one older brother who was 2 years older than me, and two younger brothers, who one is 7 years and one is 8 years younger than me. I didn't get along with kids at school. I gravitated towards the kids that were like outcasts. I really liked counterculture. I gravitated towards all sorts of different counterculture stuff. And I was kind of that kid on the playground hanging out with the skaters and it was weird because I was, anyway, I didn't want to fit in, I guess is really what it boiled down to. So I had a really great family. Grew up in the church. My mom was a stay-at-home mom. My dad was a stockbroker. One of my earliest memories growing up was my grandfather dying. And he was like my best friend. He was a war colonel in World War II in Korea. He's a lot, I'm older than I look. And he was like my best friend. He died, and that was, you know, I didn't handle it well. I have hundreds of pictures of myself, and I think out of the pictures that I have, there are only like two pictures of me from the time that I was a baby until I was like an adult where I was actually smiling in these pictures. So my first drink, I was probably 11 or 12 years old. I was in the back of my uncle's car. We were heading to a wedding reception up in Jacksonville, and I took a slug off of a flask of Jim Beam, or Jack Daniels, actually. And I proceeded to instigate a fight between my dad and this other fella at the wedding reception. My next drink, I was hanging out with some friends, Jarrell and Nate and Chris from a neighboring school. We played football with one another. We got my older brother's oldest friend, Troy, to bring us a handle of Jack Daniels. And I continued to drink when everybody else was done. And I woke up in a hospital 2 days later with a catheter being pulled out of me. My mom had been in there, and she turned on Comedy Central for me. My dad told me that he had addiction problems when I was probably 7 or 8 years old, that he had been gone for a couple months, and he explained himself in the parking lot of a Big Lots in Crystal River that he was at rehab for his cocaine addiction. And so, you know, alcoholism runs in my family. Grandfather was an alcoholic, aunts and uncles, alcoholics on both sides. I'm Irish, if you can't tell. So, that's not an excuse to drink. That's just what I did. I got into drugs pretty heavy. Drugs are a part of my story. My apologies to the purists. It is my truth, and I don't skirt away from, I don't want to omit things. I consider that to be lying. So I got into drugs pretty hard because I had that first experience with drink, and I started smoking pot really heavy, pretty much every day. Snorted cocaine in trailer bathrooms, you know, in like trailers in Crystal River, like a Citrus County kid should. Did some, a lot of ecstasy, man. Alcohol, drugs really made me feel like a part of, you know, that was the feeling that I got from them. I felt like I was part of, finally, like I felt some contentment, some relief from myself, you know? And I really liked the way that I felt on it, so I continued to do that stuff. And I didn't have a lot of repercussions until I got into high school and I decided it was a good idea to sell on campus. And I got expelled twice, and I had to finish high school outside of the district. So I was driving 1 hour and 15 minutes up to Ocala to finish up my senior year of high school. I continued to do the same stuff, though. They had me go through programs. That's when I was introduced to AA for the first time. I was going to Citrus County Behavioral Health to meet up with my probation officer, and I'd take this kid from church with me, and I'd have him pee into a little Tupperware, and I'd wear white. I didn't normally wear white jimmies, but like I was wearing some white jimmies, and I'd go and I'd microwave them at the 7-Eleven in Lecanto to get it at the right temperature, man, and I'd stick it down in there, and then they let me go in the bathroom, and you know, so I was faking my pee tests and getting away with it. And anyway, I thought I was doing something, but I didn't realize like I was just trying to get over on people who were trying to help me. My mom died when I was 15 years old. My dad died when I was 16 years old. They both died in my arms. My mom died of an asthma attack, and it induced cardiac arrest. And then my dad died of a methadone overdose. He was brokenhearted almost a year later from my mom's death. He couldn't handle it, life without her. And I just got to see him from being a 215-pound man down to about 115-pound man in the course of a year. And, you know, that was rough for me. My older brother was off at college. My two younger brothers got adopted by my aunt and my uncle, and the rest of the family didn't want to have shit to do with me because I was already hanging out with the wrong crowd. I was already on the sheriff's watch list and been arrested several times and currently on probation when all this happened, so I wasn't even allowed to leave the county. So I dodged DCF. This is whenever I was driving back and forth to Ocala. Even though I'm not supposed to leave the county, you got to drive to Ocala to finish school. I was kind enough, there was a woman who was kind enough, Karen, my English teacher in high school, who would come over and tutor me a lot. She's a big woman who had a crush on my dad that went to the same church as me. Anyway, so yeah, my life was pretty crazy. It continued on like that. I was a crazy kid. I hung out with people who were into bad things. A lot of my friends at that time were much older than me, and some of them were involved in manufacturing, and I was a young kid who looked squeaky clean, and I liked the clubs, and so I didn't have any supervision. The only time that I would go back to the house that I grew up in was to throw parties, really. I was a wildcat. And then I moved out to L.A., and then I moved to New York, and then I moved to Vermont, and I was there every single time. People would be all normal. I'd meet normal people, relatively normal, and then we'd get way worse with one another on repeat. And I had a habit of surrounding or kind of like tricking women into being with me, and then they'd find out who I really was, and then is like we're too financially tied with one another and emotionally tied with one another for them to let go. That was a habit that I had in my life. I was a bad person. And I just say all this stuff not to sit up here and do a four-step, but just to give you an idea if you've done any of these things. That's the main purpose of why I'm up here, is so that if anybody's out there who's similar to me, you might be able to relate with it and see that if somebody who's sick like me can get well using the program of AA, it's possible for anyone. I literally got here on the short bus. I went to several rehabs, several detoxes. I realized that I hated my life, and I wanted to get better several times, and I attempted to get better, but I wasn't willing to do what AA wanted me to do. There's a line in the Big Book that talks about who likes the self-searching, the moral inventory, all that stuff. I didn't want to do that stuff. I certainly needed to do that stuff, and I wanted to do that stuff. And my apologies for the misquote for the purists. I don't know it. I don't have it memorized. So I kept doing that. I went to rehab and detox 12 different times. And this last time, before I came in, I almost died. I have bad liver problems because of my drinking. And it caused varices in my throat, which are basically like varicose veins. The skin wall in my throat's very thin. So I would drink it away and I'd bleed. And my ex-fiance came home to our house in Longwood, and I was blacked out, browned out, whatever. I was up and walking around throwing up blood. And she's like, this is nuts. And it wasn't crazy abnormal for me to be doing this at this point in my drinking career. But yeah, they took me to the hospital. She took me to the hospital, and I woke up and I decided I was going to go to rehab. And I went to White Sands down here in Plants, beautiful downtown Plant City. And some folks are in here tonight from White Sands, and I'm glad to see you all here. That's fucking fantastic. You know, I went to White Sands, and I AMA'd from White Sands. And I got in my car and I drove back up to Longwood, Florida, where my house is and all my shit is. And I was like, I'm getting back in here. And my ex-fiance is like, no, you're not. I'll have put a restraining order on you. So she had had enough of me. And so I didn't stay there. And I was just driving around. I was driving around to places like avoiding drinking. I knew I was going to drink. And then Malaika called me from White Sands. And she did a three-way phone call with Brian, my case manager. And they're like, we got a bed for you down in Hyde Park, sweetheart. Like, what are you doing? You know? So I drove back down. And I think that was one of the better decisions that I've made in recent history. That and actually getting thorough and honest with AA and finally getting to a point where I had a reverence for what I was seeing happen in other people's lives. And I bought into the idea of AA even though nobody was ever selling me anything in AA. I got a sponsor while I was in White Sands. It just happened to be a guy who I deleted everybody from AA's phone numbers in my phone except for this guy. Because I get blackout drunk and I delete everybody's phone numbers from AA. Because my drunk John doesn't want nothing to do with that shit. And he's like, yo, fuck that, you know? And so I called him and we started doing step work while I was in rehab. And the day that I got out, we did our third step in front of a whole group of people. I'm going over on time, aren't I? No? Not even close. Okay, cool. I don't know why I thought it started at the hour. We got 30 minutes. All right. So we were at the University of Tampa across the river at Riverwalk, right? And we got down on our hands and our knees, and there's like tons of people around, and we're sitting there, and we're saying the third step prayer with one another. And I memorized it. He said, you'll be able to memorize it. I was like, there's no way I'm memorizing this prayer. But I figured it out, you know. And what else? Yeah. At that point, I'd worked the first and second step pretty well. I guess the first step for me was just realizing, like, nothing that I was doing was working. No matter how hard I tried to fool myself, the powerless over alcohol thing, that was apparent, but the life was unmanageable thing, I had fooled myself into thinking that my life was somehow manageable for a really long time. Because I was always able to get jobs and always able to, you know, have material things, I guess. That was some justification where I wasn't like, you know, an alcoholic somehow. And, but yeah, I was like, dude, I'm hurting people. I really realized like how much damage I'd done to my family. And that really helped me to get over this unmanageability. It wasn't me being unmanageable, it's the consequences of the actions that I was taking in my life and how they affected other people. I don't know if that's a weird way to think about it, but my sponsor said that's good enough for me, you know. I was powerless over people, places, and things, and everywhere I'd go, I'd blow things up, and I was that guy that was coming up from the storm cellar whenever I'd get sober, like, look, Ma, the storm's gone, everything's fine, you know, that kind of thing. The third step for me was like, I can't do this by myself, God, please help me. I wake up every single morning, I remind myself I can't do it. And I say the third step prayer, I say the seventh step prayer. And anyway, though, I started really, taking my sponsor's suggestions, doing my sponsor's suggestions, and slowly but surely I developed a relationship with God. I started out saying, I don't know what it is. Now I still don't know what it is, but I have a better idea because I have like a personal relationship with something. I don't know if it's a he, she, it, spirit of the universe, whatever, but it takes care of me. And it has me be of service and loving towards others. And that's how I spend the majority of my time nowadays. And I choose not to speak about the service that I do beyond that point because I don't want ego and pride to come involved. But it is the glue that keeps me in my seat of AA. And I choose to be at the tip of the spear because I feel like that's when I was in rehab, there weren't meetings coming in. When I was in a lot of detox places, there weren't meetings coming in. When I was in a lot of different jails throughout my youth, I'd never had any meetings coming in. And I didn't find out about really what was involved in AA from a person who had success with it. It was just talked to me about in programs that I'd gone through that were like psychological. Nobody really sat down with me and talked. You know what I mean? Like what we do in AA, what we do in an AA meeting. And I needed that, but I didn't get it. And I think everything happens in God's world by design. God allowed me to continually create my own mess because he wanted me to get like that gift of desperation, so I'd have enough momentum to actually make it through this stuff and be so tired of my own shit that I would give it an honest and thorough attempt. I was a lot like John, the guy who was speaking earlier. I would get a little bit of sobriety underneath my belt, and I'd be like, okay, this is good, I can do it again, you know? So my fourth step, you know, I talked with my sponsor. I mean, he did it straight out of the book. My sponsor's a big book guy. He sponsored me right out of the book. He didn't do the 12 and 12. He has 23 years sober. He's a St. Pete guy, and great guy. Love him to death. I consider him a friend nowadays. But yeah, he's just like, here are the instructions. Go do it. Right after we did our third step, and I put pen to paper, and I got pretty quick with it, you know. I tried to do it as quickly as possible because that's what he told me to do. And about 3 weeks later, I'm driving up to his house last minute, finishing up my fourth step. But I think everything at that time that I was aware of was on there. And we sat out in his backyard and we talked about it for about 5 hours. And at the end of it, he said, well, guess what, John? You're a garden variety drunk. You haven't done anything that's that crazy, you know? And it made me feel bought in. That's also the same time right around then that the craving for alcohol and drugs was just gone. That's when it happened for me. That's not when it happens for everybody, but that's when it happened for me. So yeah, I mean, I pray for God to remove my defects of character every day. I still have them. I still have some sloth in there. I have some lust in there. I have some anger issues sometimes. But what I'm noticing is those were my big three when I did my fifth step. They're tapering down, you know? I don't think I'll ever be perfect. I still have problems, is what I'm saying. For my amends, I got the heavy ones out of the way first. Those kind of sucked, really, to be honest with you, because I wasn't really willing to do some of them at the beginning. There are some amends that I don't know where these people are, or they're dead, you know, so I do my best to do a living amends. And then my inventory, you know, I don't have to, I don't have a sponsor that makes me email his inventory. I've heard about that. I was like, I don't know if I'd do that or not if he asked me to, but email my inventory every night, starting out for a year. I don't know if I would have done that, but thankfully he didn't have me do that. He just trusted me to do that. He said, nowhere in there in the big book does it say to write that down. So that's between you and God. You talk with God about that. So, not giving anybody advice in here. That's just what he told me. And then, you know, I pray and I meditate. I guess my big prayer, I didn't know how to pray coming in here. My prayer and meditation life really stemmed out of reading a lot of spiritual literature. I started out and was recommended Emmett Fox's Sermon on the Mount. I've been recommended Buddhist, Taoist, some Hindu reading, some all sorts of different stuff. But really the big book is where the meat and potatoes of my prayer life came from. The Thomas Merton prayer, the Step 3 prayer, the 7-step prayer. And then I kind of just talk with God, and I'm like, man, what can I do to be of service to other alcoholics? How can I better live your will for my life? And I really mean that whenever I say it. I don't just say it fleetingly. And I was chairing, so I was only allowed to go to men's meetings for the first 6 months of my sobriety, because I was being a bad kid in my early sobriety. So my sponsor's like, only men's meetings except for sobriety, because there's nothing there that you're going to try to fuck. And so so that's what I was doing. And so I was chairing the men's meeting at sobriety for the first year of my sobriety. And right around that time, nobody was coming to the men's meeting, you know? Nobody. It was like 5 guys, always the same guys. And it was just, I was like, there's got to be a way that I could be a better service. I picked up the cigarette butts. I've cleaned this place, you know? And God started just putting a lot of really cool stuff in my path as far as, like, how to be of service to other alcoholics and really what that means. And it's like God's given me a new life, you know? I don't feel like the same person that I used to be as much anymore. It's like I'm more and more disconnected from that. It's weird. When I'm going to bed, sometimes I'll get feelings that are reminiscent of like when I was in childhood. Like, man, this reminds me, this feeling that I'm having right now reminds me of how, it's this weird thing. I don't know. It's like it reminds me of how I felt whenever I was a kid. And I remember early on in sobriety, somebody said, it's like, you know, we strip away all this bad stuff that we've done throughout our lives. And what are we left with? If we strip away all of our experiences and we strip away all of the good stuff that's happened to us, the bad stuff that's happened to us, all that's left is just our spirit, you know? And that's, I don't know if that's what I'm experiencing or not, but I get these feelings that are very reminiscent of me whenever I was a child. And I have a child's heart, as a lot of you folks do here in this room too. And I like seeing people grow in this program. And that's kind of, it's weird, it's kind of counterintuitive, but like as I grow in this program, the more I feel, I don't know how to say it, it's kind of like I feel more innocent in a way. Because I'm not out there trying to trick and manhandle and maneuver and like doing all this old behavior that I used to do. I feel like good, you know? I know a lot of people in this room from all sorts of different experiences in life. I see like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Like, it's crazy how many guys in here that I knew. I just got sober 2 years ago. It says in the book that a fellowship will like spring up about us, and it's the bright spot in our lives. I can go to any meeting in Tampa, St. Pete, Cape Coral, Fort Myers, Orlando, you know, and those are my stomping grounds, and I know everybody there. Not everybody, but most people. I can walk in even places that I don't go to. Like, let's say I just go, spring off and go to a city. I can walk into any AA room and feel at home. You know, like, I just went up to Tarpon Springs to the dry dock meeting. And I just walked up, and they're like, hey, man, you know, and it's like these are my people. I found my tribe. I was always looking for it, and I never felt like I belonged or like I was needed in any capacity. I didn't feel like I had a purpose. Those are some of the feelings that I had before I came in, was like, I felt purposeless. I felt like I was alone, even though I was surrounded by people who loved me at different times in my life. I could be in a room full of people and feel completely isolated. And today, in my solitude, I don't feel alone. And I have this safe place inside myself that I can go and be at peace with myself. I've never had that before. My drinking got me to a point where I was saying to myself on repeat that the only answer is to kill myself. It was like, it's not an audible sound, but it's the thoughts in my head, because I don't want to get locked up, in case any of y'all are psychologists or psychiatrists. But the voice in my head was saying, you need to kill yourself. All you ever do is fuck everything up. You're a piece of shit. You need to, the only answer is for you to kill yourself, John. That's what was going on in my head at the end of my drinking. Over and over and over again. I was going nuts. And thank God I got brought to the hospital. I didn't make a deal with God or anything like that. I said, God, you gotta help me. I'm at my wit's end. I can't take any more of this. And when I gave over just a little bit, he took over for me. And he had strength where I had no strength. And yeah. I love AA. I absolutely adore it. My sponsor's kind of like the drunk whisperer. You know, the guy, the dog whisperer, is like, Oscar, how does he do that with the dogs? You know what I mean? That's how he is with me. He doesn't give me direct orders. He never has. And he never will, because I've known him for 2 years and he's never done that. Well, actually, he did once. He did one time. He told me to delete a girl's phone number. We were sitting at the Village Inn one night, and he said, yeah, you need to delete that girl's phone number. And I did, and I blocked her. He told me to do that, but most of the time, he's kind of giving me suggestions. You know, it's like these, this is kind of what worked for me. And he doesn't drop them on me a lot. He's not like sitting over there beating them into me. He doesn't want to control me. He just wants me to have what he has, and he kind of just shines a light on the path, and then I do my best to walk down that path. And he got me involved in service very early. My first service gig was picking up cigarette butts in front of Sobrenity, and I'm still not above doing that. I had no humility before AA, and now I can... I just have a freedom from self. And when I smile, I feel it, like, on my heart. I really enjoy helping people, too. I mean, that's one of the gifts of the program, is that I'll get in my way thinking about myself. And it's kind of like that story in the back of the big book. Everybody always refers to page 417, acceptance. But that story that surrounds it is beautiful. You know what I mean? There's more to that story, because it's like he's talking about his relationship with his wife and how whenever they first met, they were in love. And as his drinking spiraled, he found only faults with her, whereas before he found all sorts of good stuff with her. He's only looking at the good stuff. And then as his drinking, the prescription got flipped and turned backwards. And then all of a sudden, all he could see was all the reasons why he shouldn't be with her. And, you know, as he worked this program and started to be of service to others, he saw instead of, and that's kind of like what it was with me. My drinking and my alcoholism and my self-centeredness and my egotistical and my pride and my ego and all these character defects that I've been carrying around with me my whole life just made it where everything was so, all I could see was the hate. All I could see was the anger. All I could see were the negative emotions that would separate me from others and have me to be, oftentimes, more often than not, disserviceable towards my fellows and those about me. And by doing these steps, it's relieved me of the bondage of self so that I could be of somewhat spiritually fit. I don't know how spiritually fit I am. That's not for me to say. But it allows me to be of service to others. And I think that it has been my experience that the more that I do this stuff, as far as the digging into the steps on a continual basis, it's another thing I like about my sponsor. He keeps me in the steps. He doesn't just let me one and done it. He keeps me in those steps. And I love that about him. Like, I'll call him. He's like, dude, you really need to look at the fourth step on this one, bro. You know? Anyway. So then I'll talk with him about it. Or I'll go and talk with Willie Hall about it. Yeah, the more that I dig into this stuff, the easier life becomes. It's kind of counterintuitive. It's like, why? If I'm doing so much with AA, there's not going to be time for the rest of my stuff in life. It's not the way that it is. I'm more efficient in the other things that I'm doing in life because I'm not, like, wrought out. Like, if I had more time and that would make me more productive, old me would have been a millionaire. You know what I mean? I was unproductive with all the free time in the world. I would just sit around and collect dust. Netflix was watched. You know, like, there was nothing else, you know. And now that I stay more busy doing AA stuff, like, I'm more efficient. God has built in an efficiency for me. This is all not me. This is just the gifts of the program. And so I'm, like, thoroughly convinced that this stuff is the way that I want to live life for the rest of my life, God willing, one day at a time. There's this old saying some guys and I were talking about in AA that came from the early guys. They would say, "Are you maximum?" That's how they'd greet one another. And what they mean by that is, are you of maximum service to those around you? When AA got started out, there was the man on the bed, right? AA number 3, Bill Dodson. And we wouldn't have had that third guy if they hadn't have gone into the hospital to get that guy. There weren't any meetings back then. You know? But nowadays we have these meetings where people can come find us. People can come find us if they're looking for us. And I think about, am I being a maximum service to those and those about me? And then I think about my dad. When he died, I went through his books. There wasn't an AA book. There wasn't an NA book. You know what I mean? And it's like, I don't even know if my dad knew about AA or NA. I'm not sitting up here having a pity party, but I'm just thinking, like, isn't it my job? I feel like it's my job. I feel like God has given me a job, a purpose in life, through the program of AA, to really be out there in the trenches, helping bring people into the programs of AA and living this way of life. Because it's easy for me to sit in a meeting and wait for people to come in. But it's a little uncomfortable for me to go out and go into these places that are a little rough around the edges and try to bring people in. But if I'm doing that, and I get used to it, growth has occurred spiritually, and I get used to doing it, and after a while, it's just like breathing. And that today is the air that I breathe. And I wouldn't have my life any other way at this point. It's the most freeing thing that I've ever experienced in my life, to go into a meeting and be surrounded by people who I saw come out of different places and get to know one another and have this freedom and smiling and talking with one another. That's what it says in the big book. You know, a fellowship will grow up about you. You know, I get to see it. I get goosebumps when I see that stuff. It's just, God, I just want to be the best vessel for God. That's all I want. I'm nothing without Him. I'm nothing without this program. I would be dead if it weren't for this program. I firmly believe that. And I just try my best to you know, not take God's grace for granted. God's grace got me here, and I don't want to take that shit for granted because I did for so long, and he allowed me to stumble into some form of uprightness. And he's the only one who's been able to turn my liabilities into assets. And I just, I feel like I owe it to him. If I'm really being honest and sincere when I do my third step, and my 12th step, and my 10th step, you know, there's room to grow. There's always room to grow. I just want to keep getting better, one day at a time. Anyway, thanks for letting me share.